Hello and welcome. This is the Dirty Tech Talk podcast, where we are here to teach you the dirty details of technology. I am Christine Schwab, your co-host. I am here to guide you through your technology journey with our host, Danny Mullen. The style of our show will be a question and answer. Well, hello, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing great today. I'm happy to be here and recording this first introductory episode.
Thank you for joining me as well. It's nice to see you. It's a beautiful day, and I definitely appreciate you being here with me.
Yeah, it's definitely a beautiful day, and I kind of hope that the people can't hear the wind in the background, because although it's extremely sunny outside, the wind must be going about 60 miles an hour.
I did have a difficult time standing on my own 2 feet, which is a lot to say for myself.
Exactly.
So I want to get us started by asking you, what are the goals of your podcast and what do you hope to teach our audience?
Well, what I'm really looking to do on this podcast is teach our audience the dirty details of technology and give them information that will allow them to use technology properly. You know, too often I find people that are using, like anything in construction, they use the wrong tool for the job, for example. You can't use a hammer where a screwdriver is needed. And I feel that there's a lot of information like that for technology. Too often people are using a phone to do something that they should have a laptop for. Too often they use a laptop that they could use a phone. Those are just some very simplistic examples, but it's a lot of things that I'd like to teach, in addition to keeping their information secured and controlled.
Sounds like it's going to be very informative. You're going to set us up for success.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I want everybody to succeed. That's my goal in life.
So tell me, what qualifies you to be able to teach us today about our technology and the advancements?
I'd say the first thing that really qualifies me is I'm a geek. I mean, there's nothing else to say other than that.
Geek speak.
That's exactly correct. Geek speak. And, you know, one of the things I do hope to do here also is translate geek speak to reality. I feel I'm very qualified to do that because I've been doing things like that for over 30 years. I started, you know, as a child, you know, somewhere around the fifth grade or something. And keep in mind, when I was in the fifth grade, you know, computers weren't as popular as today. I mean, now kindergartners have iPads. Well, iPads didn't exist when I was in kindergarten.
Somehow we're all attached to technology.
Correct. I mean, stone pads may have existed, but not iPads.
Nice. So, stone ages.
Exactly, exactly. Well, it feels like it sometimes. But in fifth grade or so, I remember playing on the computer. We used it was an Apple II at the time. And we used it to do learning programs. So it was math. I love math. And so we would go there and do different math programs, similar to what you go to websites today. You know, I know kids today go out to a website and, you know, math.com or whatever, and there's little games for math. You know, how much is 2 + 2? Things like that. Well, that's the type of thing I was doing in fifth grade, and I really enjoyed it, and the computer intrigued me. So that, you know, that really got my wet my whistle, got me going in liking
technology.
It sparked
an interest. Correct. It sparked your interest. Okay.
In addition to that, I remember being at home, and I also like to hear myself talk. I mean, big surprise, I'm doing a podcast. You know, so, you know, I could go and I would take tape recorders, for example, and hit those record buttons. And yes, I mean a real cassette recorder. We didn't have digital recording back then either. And we didn't record like Hogan's Heroes on a string and a spool. I mean, a thread and a spool, but, you know, that would have been nice.
Close enough.
Close enough. So I would record things on the tape recorder, whether it was me singing or making custom mixtapes or anything. And I really built a love for technology because it wasn't like today. Just things weren't simplified like they are today. I had to sit and learn how to connect the tape recorder to the radio, for example. I mean, you didn't have, back then when I did this, there wasn't a boombox with a built-in tape recorder. The tape recorder was one device, the radio was another device. you know, so on and so forth. The phonograph was another device. Everything was separate. So if you wanted to try and link these things together, you had to figure it out. And that's what I did. And I enjoyed doing it. And I enjoyed taking the electronics apart, taking those gadgets apart, trying to figure out how did they work. I mean, that was really my goal. And that built up that education of how things worked, in addition to I could teach other people how things worked because I had that raw understanding.
So what you're telling me is you were able to take apart things, figure out all the working inner pieces, put it back together, and have the general concept of how and why that item is doing what they're doing. So basically, you didn't just hit play or didn't just plug something in like what we're doing these days?
That's correct. I mean, there wasn't much plug and play back then. You know, I remember going over to friends' houses. You know, my love of computers really started playing games on computers, and really not just games, but I never really liked playing computer games by themselves. But what I did like is playing network-based games. However, back then, nothing was plug and play. There was no wireless. So
wait, so you mean that I couldn't just take my iPad over to some place and just play like I do today? I can't just hook up to something wireless and say, play.
No, sweetheart, we didn't have iPads back then. You know, in fact, we'd bring over the whole computer, the monitor, big old monitor, and these things were at the time a whopping 15 inches. I mean, that was big back then, considering, you know, we started out on 8 or 10-inch monitors, and, you know, we'd bring over our 15-inch monitor and thought we were big, big hot stuff. Our desktop tower, you know, there was no laptops either. And, well, there was laptops, but they were, you know, incredibly expensive. You could never, you know, most kids wouldn't really have a laptop. And besides that, they weren't much smaller than a desktop in some ways. So we'd bring those over, and then we'd have to string wires between all the computers. And we'd have, you know, multiple computers in every room because there wasn't enough plugs in one room typically. So we'd spread out in different rooms, and we'd string a couple hundred feet of cable amongst this whole computer. And we didn't use the type of cables you're familiar with for networking today. We use coax cable. And I mean, that's an obsolete thing and has been for many, many years, but it definitely was on the blazing edge of technology back then, and really something that was ahead of the curve. But there was definitely no plug and play.
Wow. That sounds like more of a headache and a mess. I would definitely feel sorry for your friend's parents. At that point, I would be tripping over multiple things. So explain something to me. All of the things that you just mentioned that you required to simply hook up and play a game, it sounds like a lot of work. Why couldn't you just go somewhere and get something to do that for you? What intrigued you to actually have all of that, I guess, digital equipment, all of this equipment, and why did you bother with it? What kept you going to do it?
Well, a lot of it was just plain fun. I mean, we would had friends that lived and go up to the weekend up to Monroe, Louisiana, from New Orleans. I'm from New Orleans, and we would head out to this first Saturday show in Dallas. The first Saturday show was where you could go get computer equipment, old and new. I mean, people, it was a swap meet, basically. And what would happen is you'd show up at this, and they'd have wholesalers that you could buy directly from manufacturers through these wholesalers, and you'd be able to buy equipment sooner than it would ever show up in any computer store, for the most part. But not only could you get it at sooner than it would show up in a computer store, but you would get it for a better price. So you would be buying, you know, $500 pieces of equipment for, you know, sometimes half price, because the wholesalers really went out there and, you know, they had no real overhead. They just showed up on the first Saturday and they would sell. So the retail markup wasn't there. You know, that doubling effect that happens in many, many retail environments was not there. So we would get stuff anywhere from 30 to 70% off from time to time. And we were getting the latest equipment that you could possibly have. And so that led me to learn how to build computers. So all in all, it was just fun. But we would have a group of college students that we'd get together, we'd do this, then we'd all go home and we'd play games after. So we'd have to test out our new equipment we bought and the way we did that.
Of course you'll have to test it out. You got to see what your benefits came up.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it was definitely just, you know, it was a real fun time and it was a great social experiment. And it was a great way to interact with people. And, you know, although we were playing on a computer, we still had a lot of actual physical human interaction, you know, unlike sometimes what we see today where, you know, I was at a restaurant yesterday and I looked up and I saw three guys who clearly were friends, and it made me laugh because all three of them were sitting on their phone texting, and I'm going, why'd they even bother showing up together? I mean, they could have just stayed at home if that's what they were going to do.
No true interaction. Understand. So besides having all of the true real world experiences, obviously dealing with finding valuable equipment, to having friends that support your, I guess, passion for this technology, learning with times, advancing, were there other factors that helped you pursue your knowledge in technology? Examples being, you mentioned a college group. Did you have jobs that you geared or that you leaned towards for technology? What kept you going?
Yeah, I do have a degree in electrical engineering, and that's, you know, mostly based on my love of electronics and other things. But I also, during high school and even in college, held lots of jobs, and, you know, some of them were in the fast food industry, and I liked it and I enjoyed it. But I found myself, no matter what, drawn to figuring out how that cash register worked. I found myself drawn to figuring out how to improve, you know, the oven or something that was all electronic based. And that led me to when I got to college, it led me to jobs in more of that electronics field or that computers field. And so I was, you know, I soon got a job at an engineering company. And I was the IT guy. I was the help desk guy. So when a computer broke, they called me.
I can see that.
Yeah. And so I continued that, and I really had a passion for that. What you see on people's faces, you know, is amazing when, you know, they can't seem to get any work done, and they call you, and you show up with your magic floppy disk. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Ironically, the floppy disk were pretty hard, so I don't fully understand that, but that's what they were called. So, yeah, it wasn't like today, you know, where you could just show up with a USB stick or
call into an outsourced IT group that can just wire in and say, hit accept, I'm going to fix this.
That's correct. You know,
you had to do a little bit more work to actually solve some of those problems.
That's correct. That's correct. And it really made people happy when you showed up and you could get their computer up and running again, because overall they wanted to do work. There was no doubt. They wanted to do work. And I mean, everybody really, they do have a desire to do a good job on, you know, they do have a good desire to do a good job. So, you know, I was there to facilitate that, I would say, and really keep them going, so that they could continue on doing that good job.
Well, so from what I understand, if it wasn't for your prior experiences, all of the things that you did that led up to your technology, do you feel that you would actually be as successful in this actual world of technology without having all of those experiences?
You know, in a lot of ways, I would say yes, but unfortunately, you can't learn everything in school. And you also can't learn everything, you know, purely just on the job. So having the prior experience that I did, it was really helped me in my day job. It's actually ironic because some of the equipment that we have on my day job is some of the same equipment I started with back in those gaming, those days playing games on the computer. And they function a lot the same way, and we still have some coaxial networks. And the reason for that is when you work in the environment I work in, equipment that I work on is very expensive. And so you don't want to buy, you don't want to purchase it again. So we have equipment that's, you know, anywhere from, you know, 15 years old is some of the younger old equipment. You know, we certainly have leading edge technology there for sure, but we also have stuff that can be up to 20 or 25 years old in some cases. And that's because once you get it set up and you get it working, you just keep maintaining it and it keeps producing and keeps doing what it needs to do. So there's no reason to change it.
Now that's pretty impressive. A machine that is 20 to 25 years old. I hear people that are constantly replacing laptops that are barely 3 years old because they can't get it to work or they can't seem to have the fastest downloading time. So that's really impressive that you can basically support those machines and you continue to make them work.
Right. And well, but the thing that's hard is that you get some of these new college grads who've grown up in the iPad land and the iPhone land, and they don't know how to support that. They don't know. If it's not plug and play, they don't know. So having that experience that I've had from the past really allows me to be successful in, you know, assisting others and teaching others how to keep that equipment going and even how to configure that equipment. Because sometimes, you know, you lose a battery and settings get wiped out. You know, that can happen on anything, is that, you know, you lose a battery and then the settings get wiped out and you have to set this thing up again. And they're like, what's that? What's an IP address? What's a subnet mask?
I'm guilty.
Right.
I do it all the time. I get asked these questions and I was like, where do I find this? Right. I'm very blindsided. There's been things that have been simplified in our technology world and we fully don't understand how it works. What I can tell is you're one that is passionate in regards to educating people to know how it works, why it works, so we don't end up being that ones going, where's the settings app?
Correct.
How do I do this?
Exactly. And I hope to also, you know, when you talked about buying a new laptop that's 3 years old, I also hope to help people understand, you know, I read a blog post about 6 months ago, and I, you know, of course it was from a computer sales company. And the first thing the blog post said is, if your computer is more than 2 years old, you really should consider it. You should really consider replacing it. And I laughed because too often people get caught up in that retail philosophy of computers. And I'm not saying that there wasn't some truth in that article. What I'm saying though is, you know, all you really need is to buy a computer that does a task. Once it does that task, it should conceivably keep doing that task forever. There's really not a reason you need to change the computer unless you change the task. And so one of the goals I'd like to help people with here is also always remind them of that, but also help them learn how to continue to use computers for some of those tasks, and also teach them when they need to buy new computers and when they don't. I mean, I'm guilty. I'd love to have the iPhone 8 that's not even out yet. I mean, doesn't everybody?
I'll stand in that line.
Exactly. But by the same token, my 5C that I just retired last week really did the exact same job it did 2 years ago or 3 years ago when I got it. So there's really no reason to need a new iPhone other than I wanted a new iPhone. However, you know, the 16 gig 5C that you had, you had to retire it simply because you started utilizing your phone more and realized you outgrew the memory space.
That's true. I was taught through you, thank you for that, that there are benefits and there are tools that I can utilize to help me be successful and use the phone. And yes, you're right. That storage killed me. I needed something more to help me with those tools that I need for basic, where, you know, here and there type of things throughout the day.
And that's what I aim to really, as a goal of this podcast, I really want to teach people is, when should you buy new and when should you buy used? When should you, you know, when are you required to do something and when is it really just a desire? Remember, if you walk into the Best Buy today and you, if you walked into Best Buy today and start talking to the salesman, and I had this happen to me a few years ago, and it's actually on the laptop that I'm recording on right now. My neighbor went in and bought pretty much the exact same laptop, paid twice as much for it, and really the only difference was it had a little bit more RAM. And when she got home and I said, oh, that's a nice laptop, I was looking at that one, but I really didn't want to pay double the price for more RAM. And she goes, oh, no, no, I talked to the sales guy. He said this is a better laptop. I said, I understand that, but why did you purchase that one versus, you know, any of the others? And her answer is, well, the sales guy told me this one's a better laptop. That's fair. And it is. It has more RAM and it had a bigger hard drive. But the value of those two components alone, you know, she could have bought the laptop I bought, changed the RAM and the hard drive, and still come out $200 ahead. And I realize people don't always want to do that work. That's not the point of my discussion.
Well, that's why they have people like you that can help them.
Correct. All I'm trying to say is that she basically overpaid for something when they had, you know, the item sitting right next to it was identical, except for that those two parameters. But she really overpaid for what she got.
She didn't have the knowledge to understand the full value of what she was, what was in front of her technology-wise, to be able to make the more smart, appropriate decision in that purchase. She just got bullied with a salesman.
That's correct. And I mean, maybe he was cute. Maybe she wanted to spend more money. You know, I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe so.
I mean, I'm sure that's why, you know, other things in life work. But I want people to have the confidence and I want people to have the knowledge so that they're not making purchases that really are less reasonable.
So let's touch back on a couple of things. So upon discussing what you were thinking that we're for this podcast, one of the things was, is basically you're going to get your audience beyond the plug and play. There's a tongue twister for you. Try that one.
Yes, it is.
So you're going to get us beyond that. You're going to teach us how, what, when, where, why.
That's correct. And of course, if you want to hear about pugs, you should listen to the All About Dogs podcast hosted on Saturday mornings at 10 p.m. I'm just kidding.
Thanks. Thanks. That's why you are sitting on the other side of the room, basically.
So, but yes, I want people to have confidence, because too often what I find is, you know, I'll ask somebody. In fact, I ran into a guy the other day and I said, well, don't you have all that stored online? He goes, oh, no, I'm not sure that that's secure. Well, you know, his desire to, or his concern about security caused him to now lose several contacts. You know, I think you need to have security. However, at some point we can't let security get too far in our way of really, it can't impede progress to some point. And if it does, then we need to figure out some alternate ways. And some of those alternate, or we need to be disciplined and diligent in doing backups that are not online. People don't do it. That's why we created these online backups. That's why we created these automated things. If you're afraid of security, then you're right. You shouldn't use them. And I don't want you to if you're afraid. However, you also need to be diligent and understand where stuff is going. And what had happened was he made a poor assumption and thought his contacts may have been on his SIM card. They weren't. Well, that's something that you should have checked. You know, you can't make an assumption that's completely wrong.
Right, which basically goes into your next topic that you were you talked about, is how to appropriately use tech. So how to back up your phone, how not to lose those contacts, how, you know, basically to use and embrace the tools that are on that phone or in any regards to technology. I said phone because that was the example, but just in any form of technology, how to appropriately use it.
That's correct. You know, I want people to embrace the technology we have here in today's world and learn how to use it in a secure manner. And I also want everybody to use it in such a manner where they don't lose their contacts, where they don't lose their photos. You know, it irritates me to no end when I see people post on Facebook, text me your number, I lost my phone. Well, I mean, if everything was stored online somewhere, you know, you wouldn't have that problem. In addition,
well, because that's a secure way to give out phone numbers as well, right?
Yeah, well, possibly. But right. The other thing you can do is that, you know, back in the day, you know, me being a 13-year-old boy, you know, I had a big black book, and it was just that. It was a little black book, and I had all my phone numbers in it. You know, worst case, you know, write them on a sheet of paper. That's what we did in 1985, and it still works today. So every time you add a contact to your phone, you know what you can do? Write on a sheet of paper. Now, at least at a minimum, yeah, it would suck having to type everything in, but at a minimum, you won't have a loss. You'll have your little black book, and it'll be filled with all those phone numbers.
Absolutely. And then one other thing that really stood out for me is the fact that you're wanting to teach people to be in control.
That's correct. Yes.
And confident. I loved that you used the word control and confidence together in regards to a very advanced technology world. It can be scary. And that's why I'm here with you in this journey, because I'm not your typical tech person. I'm going through this journey as well. And I have had to learn that it's a lot of confidence and control when it comes to this.
Right. I mean, I remember when you changed phones yesterday, you got your new iPhone, and you were asking me questions about buttons. You know, should I turn this on, turn this off? Well, those are all things that are very difficult to know. And even sometimes I find myself not knowing. I mean, as the new operating systems come out for these phones, you know, I was like, what's this feature? And believe it or not, it was funny because it was the same operating system, but those features weren't available on a 5C. So then you get over to the iPhone 7, and even though you're on the same, you know, operating system version, all of a sudden you're like, what is night view? Ooh, huh? What's that? Well, those are all things, you know, that weren't available on my old phone, but are available on my new one. But certainly I had no visibility to them because they were, they were hidden, because with a 5C, you can't utilize those features.
So, coming back around, I am interested in what, basically, I want to know some examples of what you are planning to discuss in this podcast with our audience, and how we're going to move forward. So, Danny, can you give us a couple of examples?
Well, I've already went through them a little bit, but
this, you know, is true, but
I would say to sum it up, I would say securing cloud data. You know, I want to teach people securing cloud data. So double authentication, things like that. Two-factor authentication. Those are important things to securing that cloud data. And those are things that I want to teach people how to use. Yeah, a pain in the ass sometimes, but I really do think it's very important. Second, I want to teach people good backup practices. You know, don't make assumptions. Don't assume it's somewhere. You know, I had a friend once tell me, and I love this thought process, and I don't do it often enough, but I think it would be great to do this. He says, yeah, the first thing I do is back up my computer to a hard drive. Then what I do is plug that hard drive into my computer. And I said, well, why do you do that? That seems like a lot of work. He goes, well, because if I do that, then I know I got a good backup. I said, that makes a lot of sense. If you back up your hard drive and then plug it into the computer, you just validated your backup was good. Not only that, he then took the hard drive that he just took out and he put it in a closet somewhere, and now he had a backup. What used to be his live drive was now his backup.
A backup and a backup and a backup.
Kind of, yes.
Backing it up.
Back it up, baby. And so the other thing I'd like to do is teach people smart tech purchases. You know, too often in consumer goods, I remember when I was trying to buy a camcorder recently, you know, all I could see when I go to Best Buy, I'd look at the Sony camera and it would say, you know, 5-channel stereo. I'm going, okay, why is this important to me? So I look at the models, you know, it says glass from Carl Zeiss. Okay, it's still glass, still works. And, you know, nowhere on any of that consumer documentation right there could I find how many hours I could record, how long the battery life was. You know, I couldn't even really figure out some of the resolution type information, because all they were doing was marketing to me, we have this type of lens, or we have this type of, you know, storage media. The reality is those are not always the things that are important. Sometimes what's important is those dirty details. And too often we find ourselves paying $200 for a camera that the only difference is it has lenses from Germany. Well, I mean, I'm sure German lenses are great, but I mean, is it really worth $200 more? And then, of course, the last thing I'd say is, in some ways, I'd like to teach smart social media behavior. And what that really means is, again, it comes back to securing your information. I just want to talk about it in such a way that people understand. I mean, too often you get some emails from Facebook saying, hey, privacy check, hey, do this, hey, do that. Nobody really knows what some of that means. At the end of the day, the best way to be secure, well, I guess the only perfect way to be secure is to live in a bubble and not have any information out there. But that's not always practical.
You could be a bubble boy.
That's correct. You could be a bubble boy. However, you know, I think some presence on social media is good. And in fact, in some ways for jobs, things like that, companies want to see it. Companies want to see people engaged. So it's actually not a bad thing. However, you have to be careful of what you're doing, and you don't necessarily want the wrong person seeing the wrong information. So, you know, it's okay to have your phone number in some cases, but you don't necessarily want your phone number public. So those are things that, you know, I want to teach people. And also too, I mean, I always firmly believe in you should have some public data, and then publicly private data, and then pure private data. And the public data is stuff like, I mean, right now I could ramble off a phone number. I don't care if the whole world knows. It's been published publicly. It's what I call my public phone number. However, I have a private phone number also. I certainly don't want that online, because then my phone might never stop ringing.
An evasion.
Correct. It'd be an evasion or an evasion of privacy or something along those lines.
Well, I can tell you right now, I look forward to learning about all of those different topics. Those are going to be fun and exciting podcasts, because I will be right there with you learning throughout the process. So I definitely am very intrigued, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say in regards to those and to teach people.
Well, for right now, I'd say for myself, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, and thank you for joining us today. Join us next week on this podcast, where we teach you the dirty details of technology that will build your confidence and allow you to compute happily.